Welcome one, welcome all, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 50 is on its way. In fact, we are encouraged to love, is the title of this episode. Welcome everybody, this is episode number 50 of the Portal Gaming Podcast, which is brought to you by a store called The Portal, located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. You could check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and you can find us on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. Howdy, everybody. I am your host, The Brant, and with me, as usual, is...
your co-host, Brian.
And we are excited to bring you our big episode 50, and this is 2 years, Brian, of doing the podcast.
Yeah, I know. We just need to add some zeros to both of those numbers.
Yeah, that's right. We started in May of 2015, and here we are, May 2017, 50 episodes later, and apparently people are still listening to us talk, so that's good.
Was our first one, were those ones at Epic that we were recording?
Yeah, we used to record at Epic, and good quality sound and everything, but it was just then getting another sound engineer to do it, so... So that worked out, and so we just had this idea to start a podcast and purposely for the store, and it seems to be working well. And we obviously talk a lot about board games and stuff because that's our passion, but we want to make sure that we bring things that are about the stores. That's kind of our niche for ours. So.
Yeah, I mean, it also gives us some focus as far as trying to figure out what the community is doing and all that sort of stuff with like the board games that are centered around. What's being played at the store and what we're selling at the store too.
Yeah.
So obviously, I mean, there's always stuff to be done. So I think just kind of having this as a means to reach you guys really gives us another avenue to think differently and try to, get the best quality stuff out to you guys.
Yeah, definitely. And it's neat just, I kind of always had the vision that, it would be for the local community, but the podcast could also just be like, hey, listen about a local community, and we have that. We've joined the Dice Tower Network over those 2 years, and we've befriended people in the media, and we've got people that listen literally from around the world to the podcast. That's pretty cool. Just be like, okay, here's this little podunk store in Manchester, Connecticut, but people can just kind of get that insight, which I think is kind of unique. So, yay, 2 years, ring the bells. So, yay us, let's keep going. Upcoming events, we've got the Silk City Board Game Group. Speaking of local community, that's an awesome thing that we've been going with. So that's on Saturday, June 10th at the library, as per usual. So check that out. And they've got a Facebook group too, the Silk City Board Game Facebook group, that you can join to find all the games that are coming up and the who's and whys and what's of that. So that's been awesome. Thanks to them for letting us come and play and teach and whatnot. So. Awesome. Let's go straight to what's on our table.
Yeah, no, we're speeding right through this.
Yeah.
So, what do you want to start us off then, Brant?
Sure. We got a chance to play PAX Renaissance. So, we have been talking about a lot of heavy games lately. And I think I said this on the last one. I did one by myself. We are not necessarily heavy game players only, but I think just with the recent kick from like Heavy Cardboard and Deep End Podcasts have been focusing on them and these games that I've wanted to play for a while, and we've gotten our hands on them, and I found people that want to play them, so, it's really just worked out well. But anyway, that's enough about that. So I had talked about PAX Premier, and then we got a chance to play PAX Renaissance. So PAX Renaissance is the 2016 game from Sierra Madre Games. So basically, this is you represent banks in the Renaissance period of Europe. And the goals are kind of like flux. There are no goals at the start of the game, and you have to purchase these comet cards to be able to flip them over. And then there's various goals of, own more kingdoms than people, own more republics than other people, have a certain amount of like voyage or exploration prestige, or have the most prestige in the supreme religion, because religion plays a big part in this, and religious wars and conspiracies and all sorts of things like that. So as per usual, this is a Sierra Madre game that just packs a huge punch in a little box.
Did you just say PAX?
Ah, nice. P-A-C-K-S. Nice.
No, I mean, was that intentional?
No, it was not intentional. Right. Yeah, of course it was. So anyway, I'll just give a broad overview. But yeah. Basically what's happening is you're purchasing cards from a tableau. There's two sets of cards that come out. And you can purchase from those kind of small world style. PAX Premier works similar. So you can purchase those cards, and then you can put them into your tableau and kind of use them. And you're trying to gain florins that you can use and play these cards to kind of control the things that are on the map. The map is just a series of 10 cards that you lay out. Most of the pieces on the board are not yours. So you're kind of playing puppeteer to all these pieces on the board, trying to set them up to benefit you. The ones you do get are your little pawn cubes or concessions, and all the pieces in the game are they're represented by pieces from chess. So you've got a rook and a knight and a bishop and a pawn are the main ones that you have there, and your king and queen are cards that you play. Yeah, so that's kind of the rough idea behind this game, and you're kind of playing, and there's like some back and forth in terms of like, well, I'm trying to set this up so that I can win with that goal, and you're trying to stop me from being able to set that up, meanwhile, while pulling at your goal, but suddenly you could take over that lead and pull that. We played two-player, so it definitely had that direct tug of war. Mm-hmm. I got the sense that that would be better 3 and 4. It might be more frustrating because by the time you get back to your turn, the world looks completely different. You know, what's laid out there. But in 2-player, it just was very direct, like, well, I have to stop you. And until I get to that point where I've tipped it in the scale that you have been stopped, I just have to keep doing that. Of course, for us understanding that the first time, it's a very difficult game to comprehend. But
right. No, I mean, it definitely takes a little bit of time to get a sense of what you're actually contributing to. And I mean, the tough thing too, you'd like with the variable endgame. I mean, did you touch on that?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I was thinking through how to like actually process this game while you were talking.
Yeah.
But just not knowing exactly what is going to be scored, like how you're going to win the game. You don't know exactly what you're trying to juggle. And then even still, you're trying to, like, you know, balance way too many things that you can't really control. And your opponent's doing the same thing. And those actions that you're taking don't really seem to be, like, very tangible to start. Like, it doesn't really feel like you're making progress until you start seeing, an end goal, you know? Or at least that's kind of how I felt. Obviously, part of that's just playing it for the first time.
Yeah.
But you know, like I think playing it again would definitely have we'd have a better idea as far as how to set ourselves up to try to win, or you know, or at least have some sort of semblance of how we're actually progressing the game. So, but it was neat. It was fun. The flavor text on all the cards was amazing. Like there's all this historical background that like you're learning stuff if you want to. I mean, obviously, like we played the game and we weren't as focused on that because we were trying to figure it out. But you could just sit
yeah,
reading all the cards and try to just you know, get some context as to what is actually going on in that time frame.
Yeah, it's a huge learning curve. Like people talk about the learning curve on Race for the Galaxy, that is like small potatoes compared to the learning curve of PAX Renaissance. But the game isn't very long. We probably knocked it out in hour 15. It might have been an hour and a half. It's really hard to know because we were trying to juggle through all the rules and everything. But so it's not a huge time investment.
Right.
You know, once people know it, the game is going to be under 2 hours. So you're not really, it's not one of these games that's like, I don't know if I really want to spend time figuring it out at 5 hours a pop. You know what I mean? It's like, it's probably 90 minutes. I would imagine 4 players would run over 2 hours. My PAX Premier game ran, you know, 3 hours when we played that. Or close there too. Maybe it was between 2 and 3. So, you know, you're pushing over that, and that gets to a longer game for sure. You know, in terms of that. But this game doesn't seem as long. It seems like it's kind of that tug of war. I guess it depends on how long that tug of war goes on. Like, if it's really just back and forth and stop and this and push and pull, like, that's kind of fun, but could also just feel like, well, it eventually just, it just can't work anymore, you know?
Right.
Like, where will that be? But the investment here seems worth it to me. Like, it's not going to, like I said, it's just not a lot of time always you'll click. I do wonder, like, okay, how am I going to get four people or three people or two people to play this over and over until they get five plays under their belt and go, okay, I see what's going on here. So,
well, I think a lot of that, like, this would be a great travel game.
Yeah.
If you're going with people that like to play heavier games or are looking for something above just, like, you know, like a deck of cards, or even some simple things work well as travel games, but this is going to be that next step up as, like, a very... There's a lot of context in that small package, you know? Mm. So I think that's just a great way. If you did bring it on a trip, you could actually get some plays in there, finish it up, and just play it enough to really, you know, have a good system going with it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, if you were away with people for like 3 or 4 days, and you could just knock one out a day or three out in 4 days, yeah.
So I think that's a great point where, like, this game would fit that bill pretty well.
Yeah, no, but it was definitely positive. It was definitely a positive play. It was fun. I lost. It was still fun.
Yeah.
And it's neat. It's like you feel smart as you're learning it. Like, ooh, I'm starting to see things, you know, which is fun. Or I'm just starting to understand what's going on. And that's always fun in these heavy games, to start to see the system playing out.
I think for me it was more like I didn't feel... like, I guess, because there are always moments in games like this where... you, like, if you can recognize that your opponent is going to win, or, like, you know, you kind of have to balance that, or you have to see what your opponent's trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if there can be a certain point where you're too far behind to actually catch up on your turn and counteract what your opponent's doing.
Right.
So I think, I guess that's where that feeling smart comes into play, trying to kind of balance out... how do I progress toward my goal while also knocking my opponent down and not letting them get this other thing? Because there are so many things that people are trying to progress towards. You know, it's you don't know exactly what to keep going, or, like, you know, what things to keep juggling.
Right.
So I think that's just where it's enjoyable, and you're doing that, like you can outsmart your opponent by just kind of, like, sneaking through and making them think you're trying to do one thing where you're actually trying to progress toward the other, you know?
Yeah, I guess I would separate, like, in my comments, smart and clever. Clever is like, ooh, I think I found something I could do towards winning the game or towards bettering my position, where smart was literally like, oh, I'm actually figuring the game out.
Yeah, okay.
Like, I'm just gaining knowledge about the game. Oh, because I now understand this, I think I understand that other mechanism in the game.
Right.
Not, ooh, I did something.
Right.
That's a different piece I don't know if those words actually mean a different thing, smart versus clever, but that's the difference there. Clever is like, I did something. Smart's like, I literally figured it out. So I felt smarter. Also, reading that flavor text made me feel smarter, so that was good. So it was kind of like, you know, taking a history class while playing a game.
Yeah.
Unless you don't like history class, then forget I said that.
Would they like this game?
It's a heavy game, so you just got to be ready for that game and ready for that, like, cerebral experience. So it's just not an everybody game. I like to play every game. And that doesn't mean I like every game. It just means I like to play every game, and I like to teach games. So for me, you know, opening up this box and learning those rules, that was good. So that's that. PAX Renaissance Sierra Madre Games.
Yeah, so after that, we also got a play-in of Yokohama from Tasty Minstrel Games. I'm staring at the box right now. I guess I didn't really... I never think of games by what you're actually doing.
Well, the box is rectangular prism.
Yeah. It's got a nice orange. What are you trying to do here? It's kind of a logistics-based game. It's almost worker placement-esque, where you've got all these spaces that you're trying to put your workers down. You've got all these meeples that you can kind of add to the board and fill it up. Like, you know, like, one space can hold a lot of your tiny meeples, your workers. And then you're going to follow your path of workers as the game goes on, placing your primary one that does the actions on the spaces. You'll place that down on one space and, you know, remove your little meeples from there, and you'll take that action and you'll get benefits based on the number of meeples that you're removing, plus, you know, a couple other things, plus your big meeple as well as any buildings that you have on there. But basically you're trying to do a whole bunch of things to collect resources and points and technologies and, you know, another aspect, like an area control sort of thing for different end game bonuses. And I don't know. You're also like you're using those resources that you collect to fulfill all these orders, and you know there's a lot of stuff. I know when we had hopped into it, it was very much like you just told me. It's another one of those point salad games where you're trying to get points wherever you can and trying to work within your means. But I guess the really neat thing, the way the board is laid out, you've got all these action spaces that are kind of put together in a like an upside down pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
At least that was with two player. I think it's pretty similar with more.
Yeah.
And basically, you know, you're trying to connect your meeples together, your little guys, your little workers, and your big worker can kind of move through spaces along any chain of little meeples that you've connected. You know, so it's going to end up on a space where you have those little meeples as well. And then, like I said, you'll take that action, remove your little meeples, and then keep going from there. So the board is always like you're always shifting what actions you can take and what will really actually benefit you. And obviously, like with something like this, you almost want to do everything to a certain extent, but you're trying to balance out like what you can actually accomplish. And as you collect some technology cards, which I didn't really get into, but as you get some of those kind of give you a path of as far as like what you're trying to do. You know, maybe it'll give you benefits for fulfilling orders, or you know, it might give you like, you know, other like benefits for going to a specific space or taking a particular action. So, you know, basically that's how the kind of the game works out. You're trying to do all that stuff and then just, you know, kind of, I guess you just get the most points from all those things.
There you go.
So yeah, I don't know. I'm glad I got to play this. I almost got to play it on Tabletop Day, like International Tabletop Day, but it wasn't working. Like there were too many other things going on for me to actually hop in to that game. But I'm glad I got to play it. I really enjoyed it as a two player game. So like, you know, with full disclosure, like that's all I've done so far, but I did really enjoy it. And I grabbed it right back from you, Brent, so I could play with my wife. It might be a little while. I know she's got a play that she's putting on, but this is definitely one that's going to work for us. And I want her to try it out too.
Yeah, I talked about it on the previous one on 49, so I'm not going to go a whole bunch into that.
Oh, so I just doubled up?
Yeah, no, but it's fine. Yeah. But your thoughts are good. My thing is, I would recommend this game to people. I think this game is really great, and, you know, I would never, like, I wouldn't want to downplay and say, like, no, it's no good. For me, I just want to play Le Havre. Like, when I'm playing this game, I'm like, yeah, it's neat, and there's these little mechanisms, and I'm excited I'm going to score points, and, oh, I came in second, like, first, whatever. I don't know, but maybe thematically you're in a port town, or just that resource management, or the technology upgrades is, like, the buildings, but I just want that next little step up. I would say, to me, this is a medium-weight game, and Le Havre is medium-heavy.
How long does it take for you to play Le Havre?
Yeah, good point. So Le Havre, you know, two-player is pretty fast.
Is this faster than that, though?
It's simpler, I think. So I mean, ironically.
It can move. Like,
your decisions,
Yokohama,
I think, are similar.
Simpler,
I think your
than
decisions are easier to make than Le Havre. Although, ironically, you might, I don't know. Because in Le Havre, it's literally like, put your meeple down, worker placement, or grab the resources. But there's a bunch of different things in managing. But I feel like the management system of the resources is just more rewarding. Either to get a building, an action, upgrade, turn over a whole bunch of tiles is exciting. You're really doing the same thing. You're just not sliding up a point grid. You know, you're not sliding that token up a point grid. So that's me. So again, like I'm saying, if people said, oh, what'd you think of Yokohama? Should I try it out? Yes, definitely. It was great. I think it's going to be great, like you said, too. I get the sense I'd like to spend it 2 than 4. I'm finding out for a lot of Euros now, I'm starting to become that person that wants to pull these games back to 2-player.
Yeah.
They're really just doing a good job with, like, making Euros work well with 2 and not losing that experience. So I just, then I like the speed, not necessarily the whole time frame of the game, but literally just the back and forthness is fun. So anyway, that's me.
Yeah. No, I mean, I could totally see this one getting to a saturation point faster than Le Havre. Like, I feel like, I don't know, maybe Yokohama would be a little bit easier to kind of play out, or like, and Le Havre, I feel like there are going to be more options, but that's, you know, that's really not having gotten to that point with either of them, so that's just a gut feeling.
This is going to be more rewarding to a player as they play the game, because you're getting points and orders and cards, and you're kind of removing those pieces, you're kind of seeing progression, as opposed to just, oh, now I have this resource. Now I have iron, or now I have a boat. Isn't nearly as exciting as like, ooh, I cashed in this order card and this order card, and I got one of those little green agents. Like, that's more exciting. Or, oh, now I have this pile of wooden tokens if you have the deluxified edition.
But now I think you could hop right in, and you're going to get to a point where you feel comfortable with Yokohama faster than Le Havre, I mean, obviously that plays into the medium versus heavy style thing. But I mean, in some ways, it's easier playing so many games to get to that point faster. And, you know, maybe that feels like a good thing, you know, even though it might be better in the long run if you were only going to look at one of those two games as your sole focus.
Right.
So, but I don't know. I really enjoyed Yokohama. I want to play this with Rachel, and yeah, it's a good one.
And I give you my blessing.
Thank you. Episode 50.
Finally. It only took this long. All right, we got a chance to play Raw, the new updated version from Wind Rider Studios, and this was exciting because we got to play with your father-in-law, as well as with Josh and Jeff. But that was exciting because your father-in-law was visiting from Alabama, so...
Yeah, and it was nice to get a game in.
I played a ton of games with him. I used to play when he lived in Connecticut, before I played games with you, also while I played games with you, but even before, we really knew each other. So that was just exciting to get to play this. So, Raw is an older Reiner Knizia game, and it is basically straight-up auction. So on your turn, you draw a tile from a bag, or you can invoke Raw, which starts an auction. If you draw a raw tile, then that starts an auction, bid, auction, same thing, right? And then your only other option is if you later win a god tile, you can trade that in for any one tile that's out currently. Just without an auction, you could just make a trade. You're trying to collect these tiles in different sets. Civilization tiles keep you from getting negative points, and if you have large enough sets, then you'll score points for them. You're trying to collect pharaoh tiles to have the most number of them. You're trying to collect Nile tiles and then a flood tile to make them score, some just gold tiles that you can score, and then monuments for the end game. So there's three epochs that you score, and at the end of each epoch, any tile without a scarab on it is just removed from the game. So it's kind of a one-time score, and the like pharaohs and the monuments persist. They stay in play. And that happens if you draw enough raw tiles, the round just ends immediately. So there's a little push your luck element. The way you auction is you have three sun tiles in front of you with numbers based on the number of players, but I believe it was 2 through 16 for us, and one starts in the middle because there's one that's on the board.
Right.
And so when somebody starts an auction, it actually goes to the person to their left, and they bid first with one of their tiles, and it's a once around, so the last bidder gets the last chance, and you just play one of those tiles. You can't combine them, and you have different numbers. And if you win the bid, then you trade your tile, your sun tile, for the one that's in the center, put that face down, can't bid again, and you win all the tiles on the board. And so you get all those. Some of them are negative, by the way. Discard two tiles, like destroy two civilization tiles. So then you have to decide that when you're bidding. And you collect those, and once you've won three auctions, you're out for the round. If everybody goes through and wins three auctions, the round's over. Or if that raw tile, in our case with five players, the 10th raw tile gets drawn, then the round's over. That is like the simplest mechanism, and it was like cutthroat, intense, like just really interesting decisions to make. Like super, the whole game came down to making decisions, and not even like Euro style or like actual trees, like decision pass. It was literally just like, do I do it or not? Like, right. I mean, that is a decision tree, but like, it was in the moment. It was like small potatoes for where you're going, but just, oh my gosh, and what do I think they're gonna do, and reading the other players and reading the tiles. And I thoroughly enjoyed it, and we played pretty long. It was a long game. It was like an hour and a half, and it says 30 to 60 minutes on the box, but we were all getting used to it, and I just had a blast. I thought it was great. And I don't think I won. I didn't win.
Yeah, no, you set up my father-in-law to win. Because you were right before him in turn order, right?
And I kept calling, invoking Ra? No. Because of turn order.
Yeah, gotcha. But no, it is great. It's kind of one of those ones where it just gives you enough feeling that you've got some sort of control when you actually, you know, you really don't completely, like, I mean, you do and you don't. It's kind of one of those ones where you can just sit down and have fun. You know, whoever wins, wins. But it's not like you feel like, oh, I was, you know, stupid and didn't play well. It's just like, all right, they didn't, like, the tiles didn't come out that I need. Or, you know, whatever happened, happened. Because sometimes you just, you can't do anything. Like, the person that wants a set of tiles can just take it. But I know that you have to recognize that it could get there, too. A lot of it, like, a lot of it's kind of playing off what your opponents want and what they can, like, what they can do and what they can get.
I think I could play this game, and this is not true of a lot of games. I'll have to see because I played once. But I think I could play this game, like, for second place. Like, I think I could get to a point where I would say...
Well, you did.
That's true. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I think in a lot of games, it's like I win or I didn't win.
Yeah.
But I think I could play this being like, well, I, in the third epoch, I don't think I have a chance against that person. I'm pretty sure they've got it. But I think I could play against my opponent. Now, some people don't like that because it's like, well, you're giving up on trying to stop. But I don't know that I would give up on trying to stop them. But just play, I think, because the decisions are still fun to make. It's still like, ooh, how do I beat out that person? Like,
right.
So this is a game I could see doing that, especially if it pushed more towards that 60-minute
yeah, time frame. I mean, it's also tough recognizing who's in what agreed, place. So agreed. It's not like we didn't have a good sense. Like, I mean, maybe we could have sat there and counted out the points that everyone was getting, but I mean, you're not going to do that.
Yeah, who cares?
I didn't know that Roger was so far ahead of us. You know, like he had a sizable lead at the end of the game.
Yeah, he did.
And it didn't feel like, I mean, you know, at one point, like, I felt like I was way behind, and I actually came in pretty close to, you know, kind of the middle of the pack. So it was just, it didn't really feel like, you know, it felt kind of arbitrary, even though it wasn't. And it was just fun. It was an enjoyable game. So
it was totally enjoyable. Yeah. It was good. It was like interesting decisions, but still enjoyable. It had that like fun of, I think it's not the fun of King of Tokyo because that's really like out loud fun. But it did like, oh, they took that off. Like you had those moments, those fun like, oh, I can't believe you did that, or oh, that was, you're gonna pass. What do you do? You know, like you really had the interaction was like. You interacting, not the game interacting. It wasn't my piece interacts with your piece. It was like my mouth interacts with your ears.
Right. No, I mean, it feels kind of like a step up from like Ink and Gold for me, where it's like, it's not just that one decision. Should I stay or should I go? Yeah. Basically, it's like,
okay,
it goes from there. Because I mean, a big part of the way you can play this, I mean, obviously you don't have to. You can kind of just get what you want, and then get out.
Right.
But a lot of the, like, that I enjoy with it was, you know, just trying to push your luck and be that last one, that last man standing, trying to get, like, the most the most bang for your buck. So I think a lot of that is just kind of taking something simple like Ink and Gold up to that next step and just making some more decisions where, you know, you can really, you can choose to do stuff that's not optimal to you, but it's worse for everyone else.
Yep.
So I think that part's really fun, and I don't know, Raw is just a really good one. So yeah, you definitely should keep your eyes out if you can try it or, you know, pick it up somewhere. It's worth it.
Yeah, and we played Amon Ray a couple episodes ago. We talked about that, and that was really fun too. So
yeah.
So we're definitely on the Rhino Nietzsche. I guess we got to grab Tigris and Euphrates now and play that one. Did you try it?
Tried to try it.
Oh, you tried to try it. All right. Well, I played it before. I played that back in the day on whatever the old little edition was. So. We'll have to do that one again. So, any other things to talk about?
No.
Not in here. All right. So that's what's on our table. Let us know what's on yours. All right. Our discussion topic today here is the Spiel des Jahreswords were announced. So this is Game of the Year in Germany, and they've now split this thing to three categories. So you got the Spiel des Jahres, the Kinderspiel, and their Kennerspiel. And so we'll kind of go through those and just give our reactions. That's a pretty short discussion section, but it's an interesting one. So Spiel des Jahres, Game of the Year. This is kind of like family game or just game to represent games. And in Germany, like it's important to realize like alongside movie reviews in the newspaper are board game reviews. Like it's so it's on that level. This is a normal thing. So they're just trying to kind of pick a game that says, hey, try this one for this year and add this to your family collection and people will. In Germany, they'll just go at it and be like, oh, I want to have all the Academy Award movies. I want to have all the Spiel des Jahres winners on my shelf. Doesn't make sense in America. We don't think that way. And if we do think, oh, I want to have those games, we just want to have every game. Right? It's just, I want to have them all, so this will be Spiel des Jahres, this will be whatever. I just want to have them all. But there, that's what they do. So anyway, so the three here were King Domino, Magic Maze, and El Dorado. So I've only played King Domino of those three. Did you play King Domino with me?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's the only one that's available in the U.S. right now. Gotcha. I mean, at least for us. We haven't seen... I thought Magic Maze was pretty close, but I'm not 100% sure. And El Dorado, I didn't see like a set date. I know there were talks of it coming. You know, I mean, that's through Ravensburger, which they're usually pretty good about bringing that stuff over, but it's just a matter of timing for that.
Yeah, so. And nobody really knows the necessary time frame. Like, there's a whole, right. Like, it's got to be published in Germany by March, but it's just hard to even know what that means, that, you know, because game publishing dates are tricky, so.
But even speaking to King Domino, because we get that through Blue Orange Games, and, I mean, they've been doing a great job of late.
Yeah.
I know we just had the sales rep come out, the guy that works at Blue Orange. He came to the store, demoed some games to, like, you know, our other members of the staff. We had played a lot of them at I almost said Gen Con, at Toy Fair. So we'd played a lot of those already, but, you know, the rest of the staff really got to try out some of those ones that we really wanted to focus on. And we ended up picking up another case of King Domino in order to get, like, a giant version of it, which should be neat. So it's definitely one that's worth it, and I'm glad it's got the nomination. It definitely blew me, like, out of the water from what I expected to what it actually, you know, came out as. So, you know, if the other two are anything like King Domino, then, you know, that's a great category then. So
it's perfect if you put it in that family game category, because it's so simple to play, but the decisions feel rewarding. So as a gamer, you're like, oh, this is fun. I'm having fun making these decisions. There's some variants, too. There's like a 7x7 grid you can play with two player, and there's like a double Kingdoms or...
Oh, with two copies of it?
I think. And then there's one where it's like you have to keep yours in the center. Okay. And you have to be able to fill your... I don't know. It's very... So there's all these, like, variants that people have made that they said are super fun. And I see people tweeting about the game all the time. You know, definitely when this announcement came out, people were excited. So I totally agree. It's a great game. And it's a super low price point. It's like $20 or something. So if I'm wrong, if it's 25...
20 or 30, somewhere in there.
So, it's, you know, it's a super low price point. So definitely, yeah, if you haven't tried it, get your hands on a copy. I mean, purchasing a copy just makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, like, honestly, as opposed to tracking it down. So, yeah, we haven't played the other two, so we really can't make a big comment. But with how much fun we'd have with King Domino, that would just be a great game to represent this.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's always tough when we're looking at awards like this where it's like, you know, I'm very quick to just say, oh, yeah, King Domino has it, because I haven't touched the other ones. Two. So it's just, I'm trying to be very careful in, like, how how it's coming off. It's just, yeah, we're very high on King Domino. So, you know, we want to try the other ones out as soon as we can.
And we'll update as soon as we do.
Yep.
Cool. So then the Kinderspiel, which is the kids' game of the year, Captain Silver, Ice Cool, and The Mysterious Forest. So, Ice Cool, you got a copy at Gen Con. I got a copy since. I just played the living daylights out of the game.
Yeah.
It's just played everywhere. It's easy. So, again, this is just the king of this one because we haven't played the other two.
Right.
So,
I watched The Mysterious Forest.
Yeah.
But when I was watching it, it didn't look like it was an easy kids game.
So I was really excited when we saw it at New York Toy Fair because it's beautiful. And it has, like, action figures. I mean, they don't move, but they're, like, these, you know, action figure size things. And it looks awesome. And I was like, maybe I'll try to grab that and play it and see what it's like, you know. And I looked it up on BGG. What? And it's, like, 5.2.
That's what it's
the rating. The rating on BGG. Now it's hard to know with a kids game because the adults play it and then hate it and assume it's for adults. But I was just like, ugh. But I mean, I got this recommendation, so that's cool. I know I picked up my first Stone Age last year, which I believe won the Kinderspiel, and I had left that behind when we went to Gen Con for my wife and my daughter to play. And my wife was like, "Yeah, it's not that good," but I've since played with my daughter. I think it's great. I have a great time with that. I'll play that, and like. it's quote unquote beneath my daughter at this point, but right. it's super light and fun. Like, and you're resource collecting and then trying to turn them in. You kind of move around a circle and it has a memory element, which is a little bit strange, but it works. I mean, if you really played with kids that didn't have any ability to do memory, it would be frustrating, but it's not super key. Like, you kind of have to just remember where one tile is that you want, or two. Gotcha. Anyway,
isn't a lot of Mysterious Forest? Isn't that a lot of memory?
No, wasn't that Wendigo when we saw it? Mysterious Forest is a lot of memory drawing. Oh, you saw it played out.
I thought
out.
So. I might be misremembering like what the actual gameplay was, but I thought it was some memory involved in that. But
yeah,
who knows? I mean, yeah, no, but Ice Cool is great. Captain Silver, I don't think that one's come to the States yet, but yeah. But yeah, I mean, again, it's kind of that similar take. Like, if the other two, if Captain Silver and the Mysterious Forest are any good, then again, we really just like the category too.
Nice.
So
yeah, we probably shouldn't keep talking about categories where we've only played one game.
Yeah, but at least the game that we've played is good.
So let's go to Kennerspiel.
Yeah.
Good point.
I've played
all three. So Exit the Game, I guess all of them in a category got nominated. Raiders of the North Sea and Terraforming Mars. So Exit the Game is a Cosmos game for Inca and Marcus Brand, and these are escape rooms. I talked about this, I don't remember episode numbers. I want to say 48. I talked about this one, and we got a chance to play, and it's the best escape room game that I've played. The Secret Lab. I've got the other two, and we just haven't found the night to sit down to play them, and I want to get you in on a play, but right now it's a little tricky on nights. That one's great. Raiders of the North Sea, I believe was a Kickstarter game, and I don't know the company off the top of my head. And that one was fun. It boasted, like, the dual worker placement. So it's like, you get something when you place the worker, and then you pick the other worker up, right? So
yeah, I think so.
So we had played that a while back, like a year or something back, probably. And it was neat. It was a neat little kind of lighter Euro-style game, but there were some strange parts and some, like, pieces that seemed a little, like, actions that seemed a little overpowered. But it was fun, but we never played it again.
Right.
And then there's Terraforming Mars, which right. is my favorite game from last year. Yeah, I mean, I just don't have much to say when I just love that game, and that would absolutely be my choice. It's the most popular of these games.
Even with Exit kind of competing in there?
Exit is innovative, I suppose, so I could see that. I wouldn't be shocked. So I guess Raiders of the North Sea would shock me to win this. I do know a lot of people like it, but, I mean, there's no way it's gotten the publicity, but it's hard to know what has publicity in Germany versus what has publicity in America. I know Terraforming Mars was designed by a Swedish company, so that's at least proximity close to Germany. If they could just get a boat of them across the sea there, they'd be all set. Because that's how it works. Yeah, I mean, the escape room games are just becoming so popular. It'll just be interesting to see. It's neat to see that they put that in this category. A lot of people would argue that's an activity and not a game.
Right.
If you go back to Ludology a couple episodes ago, Gil Hova and Jeff Engelstein were kind of arguing about what makes a game, and escape rooms are considered games because of the time element. When you put the time and the score element to it, it now becomes a game, because if I do this faster or smarter or better or with less clues or in a better time frame, which is the same as faster, I have a higher score than you, so now there's something for you to achieve. There's a goal at the end. We're not Ludology, so we don't need to go there.
Well, it's called there. Exit the Game.
The Game, that's true. So, if you put the title in it, yeah, Feeding the Cat, The Game.
But, I mean, I need to try that still, like you're saying. Like, but Terraforming Mars,
yeah,
I don't see how that... Like, that one's just gotten so much hype here in the States, so if that's translated across across the ocean and everything, yeah. Then I don't see how that one would lose.
And Bonacore said, like, he just hit the third print run is so large, he can't imagine he'd ever have to make another print run. I don't know what that means, but that just right. tells you what the popularity is. He's saying, I'm going to print this game and basically just keep it in print by this print run. So,
you know, it's funny, though. Like, I don't feel like the Kenner Spiel typically aligns with what my expectations would be for that award.
Mm-hmm.
But I think these ones are, I mean, I guess Raiders of the North Sea is one that I was kind of surprised. Like, I was taken aback, like, yeah. Oh, that was surprising to me that that one was nominated. But I mean, I'm glad to see the other ones, and it's nice to have some sort of similar thinking behind that.
Yeah, I mean, unless Terraforming Mars is considered heavy by people because of all the cards that you have to read, right? It becomes a Magic the Gathering or that style game. But other than that, it's not that much. I mean, I guess the scoring at the end can be a little bit intense to focus on, you know?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's, like, recognized. I guess it depends on your crowd. I feel like this one would be tough to bring to people that haven't really played. Like, I wouldn't play with my parents.
Yeah.
I mean,
so but Kenner Spiel's not supposed to
be. No, yeah, yeah. But I don't know what you were going, like, you were just saying.
Oh, just they don't tend to pick the heavier, even for the Kenner Spiel.
Right.
They tend to pick lighter games, so that would be Raiders of the North Sea to me, or Exit the Game, just because it's accessible, right?
Gotcha. It's so you're saying for actually winning the award, yeah. It would be tough to have the heavy one in context, you know.
I guess.
Relative to the other ones, but I don't know. They're all fun.
It'd be crazy to me. Yeah. As much as I love Exit the Game, like, I just want to do it. I don't, like, I'm not going to replay it, so it's just a fun experience, you know what I mean? But Terraforming Mars is, like, something that I'm going to walk out of your house with tonight.
Now, what? what was the thing? Time Stories have been up for one, right?
Time Stories and Pandemic Legacy.
Right. Neither of those won.
Isle of Sky.
Isle of Sky did.
The lightest of the bunch.
So it's kind of that recognition again. Yeah. Did you think Time Stories should have won with that? Is that what we were saying?
It's my favorite of the three.
But is that going to be a different sort of thing than Exit the Game?
I don't know what they're going for Kenner Spiel, yeah. Right? I know what they're going for
Spiel de Jars. Is that a similar thinking? Like, are those correlated to you? Time Stories and Exit the Game?
Oh, they're not.
Okay.
But they are because they're not replayable.
Okay. No, I guess I was just trying to see.
So different. I could definitely see people liking Exit the Game and not liking Time Stories. Because Time Stories is more of a commitment. It's got a role-playing piece. It's got a story. Exit the Game is just puzzle, puzzle, puzzle. Get yourself out of the room, right? And manipulate. And like, you're kind of on the clock and you're focusing the whole time. I could see somebody drifting off during Time Stories.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, let us know what you think about Spiel des Jahres, what you think will win, what you think should have been there, all those kind of things. You can email us, portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. All right. For our What We Love About ... segment, we decided, since it's episode 50, we would finally get to games we love, but we never get to play. And so that's where we get the title, We're Encouraged to Love. We're encouraged to love these games, but we never get to play them. So we're just going to have some fun here going through some of these games. We've got lists here. So I'm going to start with Pax Porphyriana. I never get to play this game because Brian won't dig it out of his closet and find
it. It's right here.
And now it's sitting in front of me when I got to his house on the table. So,
did you write it after I told you that it was here?
I
write
it. I thought it would just be a fun little thing. But yeah, I've been wanting to play that, and I've been harassing him, and I got Pax Pamir and Pax Renaissance.
So can I mention a couple then? Orleans and Diamonds? Do you still have Diamonds?
Maybe.
All right. I wonder where those could be, but I haven't played those ones recently, so those that's going to be my match you for that one.
Diamonds? What made you pull that one out?
I don't know. I'd play with my parents.
Ah, nice. Cool. So I threw these ones on here. History of the World and the World of Warcraft, like, giant game, and both of these are, like, because they are entitled, like, that they suck. Like, I don't know that they're great games, but I just want to play them. And recently, Brandon from What Did You Play This Week podcasting just purchased the World of Warcraft giant game, and he was sorting it, and a bunch of people were tweeting him, and I was saying, like, that game has the best leveling system, and the rest of the game stinks, and I just turned it into a co-op because PvP is, like, the worst thing ever in that game. And, you know, he was asking me all this stuff, and I was like, at the end of the day, the game is not that great, but it's so great. Like, it's one of those games. This is an Ameritrash game I want to pull out and just play and just go. Like, I don't want to think about it. I don't want to overthink. I don't want to strategize. I just want to go. I just want to level my character and get new dice and roll more dice and see what comes up and just break the rules. I don't care. I just want to play it to play. Right.
So, but I mean, you'd say that you love that game.
Yeah.
All right. You have to, right?
I have to. It's the category title. I'm encouraged to love
it. Yeah. I don't know where to start. Mombasa. I think it's just the theming with Rachel. Like I wanted to play that one so badly, and I had it all set up and ready to go, and then it's just like that first diamond drive. But it's just like I can understand, and it's just frustrating because I don't feel the theme in it.
Right.
I don't play within that theme, and then it's just like so easy to get sidetracked. And yeah.
Yep.
I want to play that one. Seven Wonders. The problem with Seven Wonders, like, I don't love it until I actually play it, but I also don't want to play just the base game. Mm. You know, I don't love just the base game anymore. Like, it was fun, but it doesn't have enough variety for me. Like, it doesn't force people to think differently from game to game. Obviously, like, there are different limitations, but you go in and try to do the same thing based on the cards you're getting with, like, some of the one, like the leaders and, you know, some of the expansions, like, it really gives you a path that you're trying to go down. So I think that one, just one, getting it to the back to the table is tough because it's like, it doesn't trigger. I think you've even mentioned it. It's like, I don't remember that I'd like this game so much until I actually play. I think you said that at one point about it. So I just kind of, I wanted to mention that one too. So.
Nice. Well, I'll go along your lines of, I can't get it to the table because of theme, which would be Forbidden Stars and Eclipse. So these are both space games, which means Kathy's out. So that means arranging something to play them. And like the last game I played of Eclipse was this famous like 13-hour, 2-day affair that was just like so nightmaric and so AP prone inducing and just so much, you know, so much arms race. Like, I'll build this, so then I'll build that, so then I won't attack you, so then I'll build another ship, and then I'll put this on the ship, and I'll put that, and I'll put the anti that, and this, and nobody ever did anything. We just sat there and sat there and sat there, and nobody was earning points, and it just went on and on and on. And so that pretty much turned Kathy off to all space games, although she will play Roll for the Galaxy. She'll play Roll for the Galaxy, which isn't really space themed, but it
She's played Terraforming Mars, right? She didn't love
that
one, though.
That's true. And I was surprised that she said she really, like, we had a blast the time we put, like, that was awesome. We're talking about everything. I was like, oh, do you want to play this again? She's like, yeah, no, I'm good. And I was like, well, I thought you loved it. She's like, well, that play was fun, but I don't know that I want to play a space themed game. And I was like, what? So then I set up Forbidden Stars one time on like a game day that we had planned, and she totally vetoed it. So there's my,
Yeah. So I guess along those lines too, I mean, Betrayal at House on the Hill and Dead of Winter. Like, getting those back to the table is tough. I mean, it's got to be the right group for it.
I'd much rather play Dead of Winter.
Yeah, I know, I understand, like, one of them's totally just that Ameritrash-style thing. You know, Betrayal at House on the Hill is not a good game, I guess, along the lines of what you were saying earlier. You know, it's not good from, like, what's going into it, but if you can have fun with it,
sure,
that's great. But, you know, both of them, they each have some difficulties, you know, like, the theming and all that sort of stuff, especially with, like, I'm not going to play him with Rachel. So, yeah, getting those to the table, I guess that's partially on me, but yeah.
Nice. All right, I've got the one that both of us wish we get to the table. Lord of the Rings LCG.
Yeah, I got that right there.
It's our number one. That's our favorite game. Like, that's going to be the highest rank between the two of us, I think. And we have done it a couple times. We've played sessions. I haven't even played this solo in a while, and I had organized it all out, and for VonnerCon I got decks ready for everybody, like, and it's just, I don't know why, it just doesn't get out to the table. And that first time, well, we did play this a little while ago, we had several people over and we played, we ended up playing with five. Yeah we played
at the store.
Nope, at my house.
Oh yeah.
And it was good, although everybody's playing Arkham Horror right now, so that's the other one, which I'd probably jump in on Arkham Horror too. That's fine. You know, I prefer Lord of the Rings, and I have decks that are much more fun. I guess that first play with new people is tough again too. Like, it's like trying to learn the card, and I think the cards are so straightforward, and they are, but it's still just, the system is so delicate. Like, the order is such a big deal, and people don't want it to be that way. I'm trying to be like, nope, wait, you have to wait, and we have to play all these cards in this order, and then we have, you know, which you don't fully have to, but
right.
Most things are so delicate that you have to, like, go slow and think, and you don't know, and there's the unknown, and people, well, should I do this? I don't know. I can't tell you if that's going to work, so.
With games like this, back. Like, I feel like I want, like, some sort of scenario booklet where it's just, like, you know, like, something that tells you exactly what to to put together what to play against.
Oh, that's a cool idea, yeah. Somebody should make that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be awesome. Like, I think that's where I wanted X-Wing to have started off, you know, rather than just, like, this
free play.
Yeah, pick your points and go at it. Like, I wanted to have some sort of thing built in where it's like, okay, we tried this out. This is a good competitive game. You know, maybe it's a little unbalanced in favor of one or the other, but just try it out, and this is, you know, at least it's competitive, you know, and if it's 60-40 for, like, a win rate, you know, that's fine. If, you know, it's pretty good, because I know with, like, Lord of the Rings, you can have some scenarios where you just breeze through and there's no challenge at all, and others where it's, you know, you can't do anything, which is fine if you've got the time commitment for it, but if you don't, if there are so many other things to do as well, you know, it's tough to really justify playing a game where you might just not have a good experience. So.
Nice.
Yeah, let's see. There are a couple, I didn't know where to classify these. Like, there are some that I've played, you know, once or something, you know, I've played them, I want to try them again, but it's just, I don't know if I love them, but I really did like them.
Wait, we did this list.
Did we?
Well, we did the list of games that deserve a second chance. So you better at least play these twice.
Okay.
Then. No, you can't. You can mention them. It's teasing you.
I love the thought of them.
Are there any that you've played zero times?
No.
Okay. Go ahead.
What are they? Rococo. That was fun. Food Chain Magnate.
You've only played Rococo once?
Yeah.
That one time here?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Mexica. And Nautilus Industries, I feel
I'm not playing that.
Yeah. Well, that's the problem. Like, I'm not going to be able to play Nautilus Industries, but I really love the, like, dynamics behind that. But those are all ones that, I forgot to mention, and similar, Abyss, that's another one where it's, like,
that was cool.
Like, I love those games with the play.
That should come out on a Thursday.
And we never get to, like, I never get to play them, because a lot of these ones are kind of my own fault. Like, I've seen Abyss specifically being played a lot.
Yeah.
Or at least more than zero times. I've seen it being played. So that's just one where, I probably could have hopped in at some point. And any of these probably could have been suggested, except for Nautilus Industries, and played. Like, I feel like setting it up, we would play it if it was there.
Yep. Yeah, I would play Abyss if it was set up in there.
Yeah.
Ashes and Star Wars LCG, love both those games. The reason I don't play them, because Gloomhaven exists now. So these would be our go-to kind of school night, or whatever you want to call them, games, or just Kathy and I are sitting around, you know, at night, just the two of us. You know, this is separate from, like, the night that we would play Through the Ages, or we'd play a Madeira, or, like, we're really going to dig into a 2 or 3 hour game. But you know, these nights we might play something for 45 minutes or an hour, it's Gloomhaven, 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 Gloomhaven. Which I totally love Gloomhaven, and I am probably in the same boat that I'm putting it over these two games. But I keep trying to play these two, and it's like, nah, let's just play Gloomhaven. Because you want to keep progressing. These two don't lead to any progression, but Gloomhaven leads to progression, and that's what keeps that. So I just thought that was funny. It's like, because that game now exists in our house, the other two don't get played.
Fair enough. Let's see, what else? Indonesia. That's probably my own fault. I played it once and I haven't brought it out to teach it, but I love that game. Like, it was fun. It was just finding that time for it.
Blood Rage, Tricarion, and Terraforming Mars. What do those have in common?
Blood Rage, Tricarion, and Terraforming Mars. There's nothing that's in common with those.
I don't own them.
Oh, okay.
Now, how really, if I went with Blood Rage and Tricarion, it would be, you don't own them.
So terraforming Mars. And,
yeah, you do. So I could take that off the list, but since you don't own it, I can't get it tomorrow to play those. But those are ones that I would totally play, and I could see myself playing multiple times, but I don't have copies of them. Terraforming Mars is my own fault because I should just buy one. Yeah, Blood Rage, I guess I could buy. I could find that. I don't know if we have copies at the store anymore.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's harder to find, but that's one I could probably track down.
Yeah, I mean, it comes and goes.
It's just, yeah.
For availability. Well, but I mean, right now
I'm on the freeze, not buying anything. So, but
plus, you'd have to buy like all these other
yeah
expansions, and you'd have to get like the Kickstarter exclusive
and a
stuff.
A tackle box to put everything in.
But yeah, no, those ones are tough to. I'm not going to be playing Blood Rage anytime soon. So, what else? Let's see. Shogun. That was one where, you know, played it a little bit, and, like, it was, I loved it. And then there was a Kickstarter out there for, like, the base game plus some expansions, and we were kind of, like, putting it on the shelf till we actually got all that stuff together, got it in-house, and we didn't want to overplay it, you know, just as the base game. And then I haven't touched it since we actually got the Kickstarter in, so that's just one that... that I haven't really been able to play recently, but it's, I don't know. Did you try that one?
Nope.
Okay. So we'll have to maybe play it with you.
Yeah, I'm in. So 504 and Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective. These are two that are like, I don't know how to play them. Not literally. Literally, I know how to play them, but I don't know the best way. How do I play 504? I've played two solo games, but there's nothing there because I'm just competing against myself on these basic mechanisms to learn, which was cool. I do enjoy doing that. And then Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, I tried it solo, and that was okay, but I guess I want to play with somebody else. Do I want to play with three? Do I want to bring this out when I have seven people? Like, I don't know. So I don't know how, like, the actual space in which to play those, like, the situation to play those. So I've never really brought them out because I don't know that other people want to be subjected to 504 and just seeing how these mechanisms work. Like, hey, we're having a game designer's workshop and running through this game. And then Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective is like even when you have a large group of people, is everybody going to want to sit there and read a newspaper? Like, that's a different system. So those are ones that I've wanted to play, but I don't know how to play.
Fair enough. Let's see. Stitch Elm. That's one.
Oh, that's great.
That's so much fun. Like, I don't think it's in print at the moment, so it's just tough getting it.
Draw cards.
Yeah.
And sleeve them.
But no, that's a great game. Yeah. And just, yeah, that one's fun. And the last one on my list, Pitch Car, which is just a tough one getting it to the table,
well,
getting
like
it the
Heroescape.
Right. Yeah. Do you have that on your list?
I don't have Heroescape on my list. I should. Yeah, Heroescape is like if I had a room where it was always set up, right?
Right. So it's just, that kind of caps my list. Do you have anything left to add?
Yeah, so my last three, Pandemic Legacy, just because of who I'm playing with. I'm playing with you and Larry. That's done. And I'm playing with Zephra, and she was loving it, but then we started playing Imperial Assault and Fabled Fruit, and now I taught her Gloomhaven, so she's totally all about Fabled Fruit when she wants to play something quick, and Gloomhaven when she's down for playing like Dungeon. So we haven't got back to Pandemic Legacy. She also loves opening all the things, and we've opened everything except one thing, and we can't do that presumably for two more months in the game. Like, we're in October, we have to get to December. So without knowing she's going to open anything, it's like of no interest to her. So there's that. Three Kingdoms Redux. I'll mention this because we got a review copy in. It's three player only, so that's tricky to play. But
so you played that twice already?
Oh, because I did. I solo played through. And then my last one is the Terra Mystica app because I'm too cheap to spend $10 and buy it. So I cry myself to sleep not having that app. Instead of falling asleep in my bed playing the app, right? I know, I've got it on my wish list
at some point.
So if it goes to $5, I'll buy it instantaneously. No, that's just because I keep talking about switching phones.
What if it's like $7.50?
Oh gosh, it's gonna be brutal.
It's gonna be the
worst week ever. So, cool. Anything else?
No.
That was fun. All right, those are the games we love and never get to play. Let's wrap this thing up in a second. All right, Brian, take us home with some games that are coming out in the store soon.
Yeah, so Yamatai from Days of Wonder, which we actually just got notified, it should be Rick and Morty exclusive for a couple weeks. Woo! So that should be fun. Lorenzo Il Magnifico from whatever that is.
Sima.
Shahrazad from Osprey Games. Russian Bash and Mess Machine from Quick Simple Fun Games. Dark Souls should be coming out pretty soon from Steamforge Games. And The Captain is Dead is another one that we just got a bunch in, so that's from AEG. So that's kind of what we've got recent or what's coming up soon.
Ah, that's some exciting titles coming out. Nice. So there's our episode 50. Thanks to everybody for listening. If you listen for 50 episodes, or I suppose one episode, it's a pretty good one to listen to. So yes. Welcome aboard. Just let us know. You can shoot us an email at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com if you have any tips, info, whatever, stuff you want to hear about the store. We didn't do a lot of that today, I suppose. If you have any ideas for things you'd like to hear on the podcast or whatever, where we can go with the next 500 episodes or whatever. I think that's pretty much it for this one. We are encouraged to love was the title of this episode. So, Brian, I encourage you to love games like Viceroy.
You didn't put that on the list.
I will be encouraged to love Nautilus Industries while it sits in the bottom of the shelf. Thanks, everybody. Let's bring this one home. So until next time, I am your host, The Brant.
And I'm your co-host, Brian.
And we hope you step into the portal. Portal Gaming Podcast is a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street in Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on May 23rd, 2017. Please send any questions to us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Portal Gaming Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. For more awesome podcasts, visit www.dicetowernetwork.com. Thanks for listening.